This is Keith's Music Box, the box that rocks.
Hey there, ladies and gents, boys and girls, binary and non-binary music fans. Welcome to an all-new episode of Keith's Music Box. I am Keith Lisak, your host and musical guide, and what a cool show I have for you today. We are going to be joined by drummer, percussionist, and producer Phil Jones. And this guy has had just an amazing career in rock. Check this out. He grew up in a small town in Iowa, and he moved to LA in 1969 to pursue a career in music. And within just a few months, he was recruited to join the band Oscar, which was led by this guy, Lee Oscar, who would soon go on to form the band War with Eric Burdon. Phil moved on to join the band Crabby Appleton, which was a band that really flirted with stardom in the early 70s. They had a hit record, but eventually didn't go anywhere. Then, in 1979, Phil started working with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers as a percussionist, and he would go on to tour with them from 1980 to 1984. He also played percussion on a number of Heartbreakers albums, including Hard Promises and Long After Dark. But probably his greatest claim to fame is that he was the drummer on Tom's biggest album, Full Moon Fever, including the songs Free Fallin', I Won't Back Down, Runnin' Down a Dream. You name one of the great songs on that album, and Phil is the man sitting behind the kit. Throughout his career, he's also played with the likes of Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, Roy Orbison, Joe Walsh, and Waddy Wachtel. More recently, he's been playing with the multi-talented Jim Wilson and the Mark Ford Trio. So yeah, I'm really excited to have him here today, and I think we should just jump right into it, because it is time to kick back, crank it up, and rock with Mr. Phil Jones. Phil, thanks for being here, man.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure, man. Got a question for you before we even really jump into things. Curious, did you see the Stones here in LA a few weeks back?
No, I didn't. I didn't go to the Stones show. If I could have rode in a limo with them, yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's just a big crowd. So I'm not, you know, I don't do that too much.
Well, I thought it was a great show, and I got to tell you, I thought Steve Jordan, who stepped in for Charlie Watts on drums, he just killed it, man. It was like he'd been playing with them for years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't have any doubts that he would do that, you know. He's just really good, you know. There's no doubt that he would kill it.
And you've worked with the Stones, right? I think it was a track on the Voodoo Lounge album.
So I did an overdub one song, I think, I Go Wild was the name of the song. I just played a percussion part on it, but yeah, uh-huh. I did it. Yeah. And I got a credit for it. So that's an awesome thing.
Were you actually in the studio with them?
Keith was there. So, and uh-huh. Some other guys were there, I think, hanging out, but I didn't really see. Keith was the only one that was really involved in it.
How'd that gig come about?
To Don Smith, who's, engineered a bunch of stuff for Tom and also, you know, the New Barbarians, I think, and Keith solo records. So I knew him for a long time, and he would call me to do percussion gigs and drum gigs and stuff through him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, more recently, you've been playing with the Mark Ford Trio, and Mark was the original lead guitarist in the Black Crowes. And the bass player in the band is Barry Duane Oakley, whose dad is Barry Oakley from the Allman Brothers, right?
That's correct. We just got off the road, actually, about a week ago. It was great, you know? It was really good. Mark's one of the best, really. You know, I play with quite a few great guitar players, and he's one of the best. So.
And were those your first shows since the pandemic started?
Yeah, actually, we started the tour before the pandemic. We got three gigs in, and then everything got shut down. So some of these were makeup gigs, and I think some of them were additional, but this is the first time that I had been out since the pandemic. Yeah.
How did it go? I mean, was it strange being out there again?
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, we went to like Missouri and Louisiana and stuff. And in those places, they weren't masked up, you know, but the crowds were more enthusiastic because they didn't give a shit. You know, like they were just like, you know, COVID, well, so what, you know. So actually, I just stayed backstage and on the stage and away from people as much as possible. So it didn't feel too dangerous. And I wore my mask when I went out in the audience. And so it was okay. Yeah.
I bet it felt good to be back out on stage.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, it was great. I mean, I was playing rock and roll music every night. It was really cool. But yeah.
There ain't nothing wrong with that, right?
No, not at all.
So let's play a Mark Ford song. Any suggestions?
Let's see. The live stuff is great. You know, all the stuff that we recorded live is going to be cool.
Thank you.
This is KMB, and that was Bluebird Street, recorded live just a few weeks ago, actually, by the Mark Ford Trio, featuring Phil Jones on drums. So, Phil, French horn was your first instrument as a kid, wasn't it? When did you switch to drums? I mean, I got to think that playing drums was much cooler than lugging a French horn around when you're in middle school or high school, yeah?
Well, right. I mean, there's really hardly any French horns in rock and roll. I mean, John Entwistle.
Yeah.
But I just had a friend who was the drummer in the high school band, and I played French horn in the high school band, and he set up a kit in the band room. So he kind of taught me how to play a few things, and I kind of went from there because I wanted to be in a rock and roll band. So that's how I just learned to do it, you know. I think I was like 13 or something, 14 maybe.
So your friend taught you how to play?
Yeah, he showed me a few things, and then I went from there.
Mm-hmm. What were you listening to back in the day?
Surf music, and, you know, and back then it would be early, like R&B stuff, kind of. And then the Stones and things like that once they came out, Stones and Beatles. But I would listen to Top 40 radio from Chicago, because I grew up in Iowa, you know, we were in this little town. And they would play more R&B-ish stuff. And then there was a radio station in Little Rock, KAY, that had a half hour Stan's Record Room. I don't know how I remember all this stuff, but he would play like real blues and R&B. And so, you know, that's what we were listening to at the time.
When did you decide to pursue music as a career?
I guess it was like, I went to college for about a year and then came out to San Francisco. I wanted to be a hippie, whatever, you know. Then I got drafted about a month after I got to San Francisco. So I came back to Iowa to flunk my draft physical. Then stayed there for another year or so, maybe less. And then me and two other guys drove out to California with a trailer full of gear. And then I stayed here.
You started to find work fairly quickly, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like that. But for the first year or so, it was hard. I was in a band. I mean, I was in Krabby Appleton. I got into Krabby Appleton, but it was a process to be getting there. I mean, probably took a year and a half or so to get in that band and actually be making some money. But one of the guys that I came out with went back to Iowa within about 6 months. But Casey and I were able to get into Krabby Appleton, and that was successful.
Casey?
Casey Fouts was the keyboard player in Krabby Appleton. He was my friend. We were in bands together back in Iowa. And we played in other bands, too. We before Krabby Appleton, we were like Lee Oscar's band before war, before Eric Burden and stuff. And so we were in his band for a short time, did some showcases and stuff. And then did some club gigs, etc. Basically, instrumental part of Krabby Appleton, me, Casey, and Flacco. And then we met some guys from Orange County when we were doing clubs, and got Hank to play bass with us. And then I met Michael Fenley at the Experience on Sunset, which is like, I think, in 69 or something. And he's a songwriter, singer. So we got together and started working on stuff, and we got signed, and that was Krabby Appleton.
You guys actually had a top 40 hit with the song Go Back, didn't you? I mean, you came close to hitting the big time. What happened?
Yeah, we had some issues with a couple guys in the band were junkies. We came really close. It was some music business things that screwed us up, you know, just... Like we were on Elektra, and Elektra was really far, was really behind us and pushing us. And then Elektra merged with Asylum and Warner Brothers, and we kind of got lost in the shuffle. So that's kind of what happened.
That must have fucking sucked to be kind of knocking on the door and then have it go south. I mean, you guys were even on American Bandstand. It seems like you were on your way, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole experience was eye-opening and frustrating. I mean, I knew we were really good, but then there were a couple of the guys that weren't holding their weight, and then we were not getting the greatest gigs, and we started to struggle to make money, and I eventually just quit, and I moved about an hour and a half out of L.A., and for a long time, I lived out of L.A., so I got tired of the whole showbiz thing, you know, that part of it, definitely had an effect.
Yeah, I bet. Well, let's hear Go Back from Crabby Appleton. It's a cool song from 1970, and it features Phil Jones on drums. This is Keith Lisak on KMB, and I am here with drummer, percussionist, and producer Phil Jones today. So, Phil, you have a number of gold and platinum albums hanging on your wall from your work with Tom Petty, which is pretty fucking cool. How did you guys connect?
Well, Richard Fernandez, who was their tour manager, his first gig as a tech or roadie or whatever you want to call it, was setting up my drums for Crabby Appleton. I quit Crabby Appleton and I was, you know, just playing in club bands and doing other stuff, you know. And I really didn't, at that time, I was playing in a band in Laguna Beach that really wasn't making money, but it was a good band. And I was actually playing bass in that band, but I really wasn't, didn't have anything to keep me in LA, or in, I was actually living in Lake Elsinore at the time, and Richard called me up and he goes, "Hey, we need somebody to help with Stan, because Stan has a hard time tuning his drums, and he wants." Basically, I got a job as drum tech for a while.
You're talking about Stan Lynch, the original drummer of the Heartbreakers.
Yeah. Richard said, "You want to go on this tour? We're going everywhere." And I said, "Sure." You know, because I had seen the band a couple, you know, about a year before. And I was really, really impressed with them. They were really great. I mean, this was '70s, you know, late '70s. So I said, "Well, I could see doing this and listen to this band every night and hanging out and doing rock and roll, you know." So I did it, and I wasn't the greatest tech. I mean, I could tune the drums and everything, and I ended up jamming with them a lot. But when it came to loading trucks and stuff, the other guys would just say, "Get out of the way," you know, "just go away." So, I mean, I lasted about 9 months, 6-9 months as a tech. But I had started during that tour. I started playing percussion on a couple of things live with them a little bit, and then when the time came time for them to go in the studio the next time, they asked me to come and play percussion with them in the studio. And so I ended up playing percussion in the band for about 3 or 4 years, 4 years, I think, doing a couple of records and a couple of tours as a percussionist. And so I had a setup next to Stan. I had like three congas and some timbales and a bunch of toys and, you know, stuff like that.
I mean, that's just freaking awesome. And what a time to be involved with them. It was kind of the height of the band's popularity, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, I played percussion on Hard Promises and what's the other one? I can't think of the name of it.
Long After Dark?
Yeah, that one. And I played a little bit on Wildflowers, not much. But I stopped being on the payroll as a percussionist, I think in '84 or something. But Mike and I were still getting together and jamming, you know, at his house. And that's how I got into Full Moon Fever, because I had my drums set up at his house. So I'd go over there and play drums with him, and he'd record guitar. We'd record, you know, every day, not every day, but it'd be a couple of times a month. And, then Jeff and Mike wrote this, or Jeff and Tom wrote this song, so they wanted to do it, and they said, "Let's go over to Mike's and do it," because Mike had his studio. So that's how it all got started with Full Moon Fever.
And just so everyone knows who you're talking about, that's Mike Campbell, Tom's amazing lead guitar player, and Jeff Lynn, who was producing Tom at the time.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
When you were working on Full Moon Fever, did you have any sense that the album would blow up and become as popular as it did?
Not really. I knew the songs were great. I knew that the sounds were great. I knew that what we were doing was great. I didn't have any idea it would have the legs it has, you know. But, I mean, I think it speaks to the product. It was, and the songs and everything. It was just... It would always write, you know?
Yeah, when it works, right? And then when you were on tour with these guys, you're there on the bus with them. I mean, you weren't technically a heartbreaker, but you were a sidebreaker.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I was in the early 80s. They were touring in one bus. You know, I think they might have had a crew bus and a band bus, but I was in the band bus, and everybody was in the band, Tom, the whole band. So it was like, wasn't like later when they all got their own bus or were on private jets and stuff. It was more like a real rock and roll band touring in a tour bus, you know. And it was a great experience. So what can I say? I mean, I really got to know those guys pretty well, you know.
You must just have some great stories from those days, man. After Stan Lynch left the band and before Steve Ferroni came in as Stan's replacement, Was there ever a moment where you thought, hey, maybe I can take over this gig?
Sure. I mean, I thought, you know, there was a time when, you know, and they were looking around for somebody to play drums. I still think I would have been great for them, but, you know, after, I mean, this is a observation that comes with a little bit of knowledge. I mean, after Full Moon Fever, the way they recorded changed. You know, they were they weren't a Southern rock band, but they're a rock band that played, that they recorded the tracks live, you know, everybody playing at once. Yeah. And after Full Moon Fever, the Jeff Lynne method kind of set in. And the reason I think that Ferroni is so good with them is that he can, a lot of those songs were set up with drum machine tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
Even after Full Moon. So he's able to capture that, you know, that simplicity and keep it really steady. And I think that's what they were looking for.
Well, let's play a Tom Petty and the Heartbreaker song with you playing percussion on it. Here's You Got Lucky from Long After Dark. Keith Lissack here with Phil Jones. And Phil, Another guy you've played with a lot is Wadi Wachtel, who's now in the immediate family. In fact, you were in Wadi's house band at the Joint in LA for a long time, right? That must have been a freaking blast.
Yeah. We were there for 15 years, almost. We started out, it was actually Jack Temption's thing first, for about a year or two, for a couple of years. Jack is a songwriter for the Eagles and stuff. And he basically hired us to do this Monday night thing. And the band was me, Wadi, and Rick Rosas, who passed. And then we kept adding people as it went along. Terry Reed, Bernard Fowler, Blondie Chaplin, Brett Tuggle. These guys were all like regulars after, for years. They'd come and play with us.
All heavyweights?
Oh, yeah. And then a lot of people came. Like Keith came there three times to play with us. Robert Plant came there. Lots of people. Just a lots of people. George Clinton. everybody. Donovan, Eric Burden, Delbert McClinton, and Guy Clark. There's Joe Walsh was there all the time. Johnny Rivers was there. Just, everybody.
So you're some dude who grew up in a small town in Iowa, and you're now playing this regular gig with the cream of the crop of rock and rollers who are just stopping by to sit in. You must have been totally stoked, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wasn't thinking about being in Iowa then, but I was thinking.
No, I know.
It was just more like, I think there's a light bulb that goes on when you're young or something that you decide that, I can do that. And you just got to go, it's Joe Walsh playing next to you or Keith or anything. But you just realize that if you do what you do, we're all just musicians on the stage playing music, and it's all great, and just you feel, just do the best you can and have fun. In some sense, I'm starstruck by these guys, but not really. You're there to play the music. Steve Jordan came there and sat in and played on my drums. And Daryl Jones came and played with us a lot, And I would listen to them play it. And then I'd go back and Wadi would say something like, wow, I wish you were playing, because that, even though it was Steve Jordan or Joe Vitale or somebody, it would be like, I knew how to play the songs with Wad. So it was like,
Well, a lot of that comes down to chemistry, right? Of course you got to have the chops, but you got to gel with the other guys too.
Oh yeah. For sure. Even the hang, there's always people talk about, like riding in the bus with somebody or being on a long tour. It's important to be able to get along with the people and have it be an enjoyable experience,
Yeah, you could be a great drummer, but if they don't like you and they don't want to hang out with you, you're not going to get that next gig with them.
No, you're not.
So another guy you mentioned who you play with a lot is guitarist Jim Wilson, who used to be in the Rollins band and has played with Daniel Lanois. He's got some albums out that you also produced, didn't you? And a lot of it is kind of balls to the wall, straight ahead rock.
He writes a lot of different stuff. He's really a lot of his stuff is like really hard rock stuff. He has another band that he's in with that's called Motor Sister. He does things that are all across the board. Okay, everything. He's in a band called Motor Sister that's got Scott Ian and those guys from Anthrax, and it's basically a borderline metal band. And then he plays with Dan Lanois all the time. Daniel Lanois, he's his bass player and singer. They sing together, and Jim has this great voice. And so what he brings me are are rock and roll songs that don't fit in those genres that I, you know, we kind of can relate to each other in that way. We record the tracks just him and me, and then I add on, you know, bring people over and add and to them. Like Mark Ford's played on a bunch of it. Mike Hamill even played on a couple songs. Spooner played on a couple songs, Spooner Oldham. All these, I just get a bunch of people to come and play on these records. And he's a great singer and a great songwriter.
Well, his EP, Rocker's Delight, has four tracks, and I think it's cool stuff. And there's one track called Hot on it that he does with Bernard Fowler, who you mentioned earlier and has been a backup singer with the Stones for many years, including on this current tour. So I'd love to play that now.
Yeah, and by the way, I played bass on that too. So yeah, I played drums and bass, and then and Jim and Bernard sang it. Yeah, it was Hot with two T's.
Cool. This is Jim Wilson with Phil Jones and Bernard Fowler doing Hot with two T's. So, Phil, what would you be doing if you weren't a professional musician?
I don't have any idea. maybe I might have a record store or something. Or, of course, that's not happening either. But
aren't you into vintage drums and audio gear as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a time during my when I was living out away from LA where I had an antique business to kind of supplement the income. And with my ex-wife. We had an antique business, and I like that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't want to do it as a business again. I have a lot of vintage drums, and I don't really have very many new drums at all. In fact, I don't have any drums. I think the newest drums I have are 1977 or something.
Oh, wow.
Well, I have a couple snares from the 80s, but I think it's the best stuff, you know.
Do you have a preferred line of drums you tend to play?
I have two sets of Ludwigs. I have one set of Gretsch, and I have a set of Camco, and I have some Japanese ones. I mean, I don't have like 50 kits like some guys do, but I tend to not really have a preferred brand. I just like whatever sounds right in a particular situation. In my studio, I kind of have a set of Camcos that are set up sort of permanently as they're 77 LA Camcos, and they're really, really good, you know, sound really great. So I have a set of 69 Ludwigs that I took on the road, that I take on the road, smaller drums, you know, that sound really good. A Ringo kit, basically. So that, yeah, I know I'm not deferential to any particular brand.
Okay. Phil, anything we haven't talked about that we should be looking out for?
I've got maybe three or four ongoing projects, Jim being one of them. And then I've got another guy at Easton Everett, and then another guy, JJ Diamond. I'm not like a commercial guy trying to get a bunch of business of people I don't know. Both Easton Everett and JJ I knew years back, and they came to me and said, I got songs I want to record. So I said, yeah, okay. And Jim I hooked up because we met on a tour and just kind of hit it off. So for him, I just felt like his music, his songs and his singing and everything he does just demands to be heard. You know, it's so good. It's just like, okay, I can get into this, you know? And so we'd love to make some money with it, but so far we haven't really made any money hardly, but who knows, you know, just keep putting it out there.
Yeah. Plus you're having fun while you're doing it.
Yeah. Having fun, but plus this is my opinion, but other people's opinion too. We're making legitimate rock and roll music. You know, it's not garbage.
Yeah.
There's a lot of garbage out there. You know?
Totally agree. And I got to admit that sometimes I'm concerned about the future of rock and roll. Are you?
Well, am I worried about it? No, I don't really worry about it. But there's always good stuff. I mean, like Sturgill Simpson. That he may be a country guy, but it's rock and roll music. You know what I mean? Most of it is. There's people out there who are really kicking ass, you know. And I'm anxious to see what Mark does now. The Black Crow, I was not a huge fan of the Black Crows. I always tell Mark he was the best part of it. But it's kind of like the music business has always sucked in some way or the other. And now it's just like it's really hard for the artists to make money. That's a bummer. The only way you can make money is by touring. And, you know, so I still think that there's value to the recorded product. It's like making a painting or something, but people just steal it, you know, basically. So there's no real, I'm not worried about it. I think the rock and roll music will always be happening. You know, so I'm not worried about that.
So there's hope. Cool. Well, Phil, I really appreciate your time here today. It's been fun talking to you and hearing about your rock and roll life. I got to tell you, I'm envious. I mean, as a rock fan, it doesn't sound any better than being on Tom Petty's bus cruising to the next gig.
Yeah, I mean, I experienced that, so I'm very grateful for that. You know, I know too that I added to what they were doing. When I was playing percussion in that band, I would think, you know, this is the best band in the world right now, and I was probably right, because those guys are there's nobody better. Okay, just to stand on the stage with them is like, you know, an amazing thing.
I can only imagine. Well, thanks again for being with us today, Phil. I think it's only appropriate to go out with Running Down a Dream off Full Moon Fever, which has you on drums.
Possible. Hit cruise control and rub my eyes. The last 3 days and the rain was unstoppable. It was always cold, no sunshine.
Dream.
Now, that was fun. I just love talking to guys like Phil who have played a role in the music I love because they've had a real impact on my life, whether they realize it or not. That was always one of my goals for KMB, to bring you the stories and the music from the people and the artists who help form my musical tastes and sensibilities, for whatever that's worth. And I hope you like hearing these stories and this music too, and if you do, please turn your friends on to KMB and support the show by following it on Instagram and Facebook. And do come back next week for an all-new episode of KMB and what I think will be an important announcement about the show. Until then, have a good one.